distinguished U.S. Commissioner General of the 1974 Spokane World's Fair, the Honorable Claude Beekins. Mr. Beekins, will you give my hand, please? The official relationships of the state of Tennessee with the Paris-based Bureau of International Expositions, that important organization which officially sanctions all world fairs, cannot be symbolized more forcefully than through the juxtaposition of the flags of the state of Tennessee and the BIE. It is my pleasure at this time to ask the Honorable Lamar Alexander, Governor of the great state of Tennessee, to join with me as the Tennessee state flag is raised. Governor Alexander. We're honored today to have with us Madame Marie-Helene Dufresne, Secretary General of the Bureau of International Expositions, and I'd ask her to join us as the BIE flag is raised. Madame Dufresne. And representing the Knoxville International Energy Exposition, Mr. Jake F. Butcher, Chairman of the Board of KIEEE. Mr. Butcher. Thank you very much.
Chairman of the Steering Committee of the College of Commissioners of the Commissioners General, the Honorable Rio Kawade.
Governor Alexander, Secretary Block, Secretary Baldrige, Senator Baker, Senator Sasser, Mayor Tyree, Mr. Butcher, Mr. Roberts, Mr. Oldham, Madame Dufresne, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great honor and privilege for me to take part in the opening ceremonies of the 1982 World Fair. It is a particular privilege in as much as this is the first World Fair to be held in the South in the 20th century. This fair is the centerpiece of the rapid economic development of the South, which has in recent years drawn the attention of many nations. My participation in this program is symbolic of the participation of all 22 nations represented at this great energy exposition. That is to say, while I'm Commissioner General of Japan, my duty today is to go beyond the boundary of nationalism and speak as President of the Steering Committee of the College of Commissioners General on behalf of all the participating nations. It is often difficult for us to cast aside nationalistic tendencies, but the participating nations in this exposition have recognized their task to serve not only their people, but also all humanity. The slogan, "Energy Turns the World," is all too true. It is also true that energy makes human life happy. But we have learned recently that energy has high cost, that it is of limited supply, and that it can cause environmental pollution. The participating nations in this world here are offering to all humanity, among other things, ways to conserve energy, cheaper methods to explore energy resources, and technology to exploit alternative sources of energy. In other words, an energy strategy for future generations. It is my wish that millions of people from the United States and throughout the world will come to Knoxville to see the excellent cooperation and harmony evidenced at this exposition. And it is my sincere hope that this 1982 World Fair will contribute to lasting friendships among nations and peace on earth. It is my honor at this time to invite the participating nations to present their flags to mark this grand occasion and to proclaim their presence in this great exposition. Thank you very much.
And now, the nations participating in the 1982 World's Fair present their flags. United States, the Honorable Joe M. Rogers, Commissioner General of the United States Section. Presenting the flag of Italy, His Excellency Alberto Balotelli, Commissioner General of the Italian Section. Presenting the flag of France, Mr. Laurent Lebel, Deputy Commissioner General of France. Presenting the flag of the Federal Republic of Germany, the Honorable Referees Kinzelay, Consul General and Commissioner General of the Section of the Federal Republic of Germany. Presenting the flag of the United Kingdom, the Honorable Trevor Gatty, Her Britannic Majesty, Consul General and Commissioner General of the United Kingdom Section. Presenting the flags of the Commission of European Communities, Mr. E. Simon, Deputy Commissioner General of the European Community, representing the additional European nations, Belgium, Denmark, and Greece, and Mr. Andreas Ecker, Deputy Commissioner General of the European Community, representing the additional European nations of Ireland, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands. Presenting the flag of Japan, Mr. Takao Tomonaco, Deputy Commissioner General of the Japanese Section. Presenting the flag of Australia, the Honorable Eric Whitley, Commissioner General of the Australian Section. Presenting the flag of Mexico, Rodolfo Dominguez, Commissioner General of the United Mexican States. Presenting the flag of the Royal Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the Honorable Ibrahim Khaja,
Commissioner Chancellor and Commissioner General of the Southern and Arabian Section. Presenting the flag of the Republic of Korea, the Honorable Dong Woon Cho, Consul General and Commissioner General of the Republic of Korea Section. Presenting the flag of the Hungarian People's Republic, His Excellency Janos Pitran, Ambassador of the Hungarian People's Republic. Presenting the flag of the People's Republic of China, the Honorable Wu Bingchang, Commissioner General of the People's Republic of China Section. Presenting the flag of the Republic of the Philippines, the Honorable Joselito Castro, Commercial Counselor and Commissioner General of the Philippines Section. Presenting the flag of the Arab Republic of Egypt, His Excellency Dr. Ashraf Walker, Ambassador of the Arab Republic of Egypt.
I am here with in very distinguished company. I'm with some members of, our president's cabinet who help keep the machinery of our country running. The business end of our country, but it's just the economics of it, is of primary interest to all of us always. I am pleased to introduce the Secretary of Commerce, the Honorable Malcolm Baldrige.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be brief. The opening of this fair today signals an acknowledgement of a very important communion in international affairs. In the next 180 days, this expedition will do much to broaden our understanding of energy and what energy means to the business of mankind. Energy and commerce go together, and energy's importance in international commerce cannot be underestimated. I want to thank personally on the behalf of the United States all of the countries that have helped us in putting this exposition together. It demonstrates the friendship internationally that we need for the world of the future. And I also want to thank the United States exhibitors for their efforts. I'm sure at the end of this exposition, there'll be a better understanding and a new appreciation of energies and our ability to work together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Secretary Baldrige. One of our most important contributions to the whole world is the food we supply. I'd like to introduce the Secretary of Agriculture, the Honorable John R. Block.
On behalf of this administration and the great agricultural industry of the United States, I want to express appreciation for the opportunity to come here to join, bring other countries to join together. If there's anything we all have in common throughout the world, it's an agriculture, it's an agricultural industry, it's a need for food and fiber, and the United States leadership in the area of food and fiber is well known throughout the world, and we are forging ahead to work with other countries in expanding trade on a freer basis and improving agricultural production in countries throughout the world. And it's indeed a pleasure to join here this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I have known Senator Howard Baker for a long time, and I have respected his judgment and his wisdom and his courage. He is a statesman and a great senator from my favorite state, but I never knew the real extent of my devotion until I saw some remarkable photos he took at one of those big dinners which were held in Washington. I attended and entertained there. Now, if you have a wedding or an anniversary, a graduation or a bar mitzvah or a christening, and you want to have great pictures taken, call your senator from Tennessee. Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Howard Baker.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I wish my friends to express my thanks to many people. And I'm sure you join with me in these expressions of gratitude. First, I wish to express my appreciation and that of the people of Knoxville, of Tennessee, and the entire nation to President and Mrs. Reagan for joining at this celebration and for allowing Tennessee to be their host. I thank the leaders and planners of the 1982 World's Fair for their resourcefulness and commitment and for producing what promises to be one of the most memorable and meaningful World's Fairs in history. And I thank the citizens of Tennessee for echoing and manifesting the convivial and warm-hearted spirit for which they are renowned. Faith and dedication, self-awareness, and individualistic spirit, civic responsibility, and national pride. These are the tenets which have been embraced by Americans for over 200 years. We have always shared these qualities with each other. And today, we commemorate the opportunity to share them with the entire world. The 1982 World's Fair symbolizes the transformation of a dream turned reality. Tennesseans, like all Americans, relish the opportunity to attempt the impossible and to achieve it. This is our legacy, and here at the 1982 World's Fair, we see that legacy affirmed again. My friends, it is a privilege for me to stand here and to share in the pride that every Tennessean, that every American must have at the sight of this gathering of tens of thousands of people to look into our future and to say that we are confident that the greatness of America and the greatness of the American people, the promise of that greatness is still before us. and not behind us. Thank you very much.
Ruffles and flourishes. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and Mrs. Reagan.
Ladies and gentlemen, your governor, Senator Baker, your congressman, members of our cabinet, and a good friend and loyal Tennessean dinosaur, it's a special pleasure for me to be here this afternoon in the shadow of the Sun Sphere, a symbol of energy potential near the banks of the Tennessee River, whose force we have tapped for centuries. All Americans can be proud of this World's Fair that we open today. For the next 6 months, we'll be host to representatives of 22 nations, more countries that have participated in any World Exposition in more than a decade. Here in Knoxville, in the Tennessee foothills, in the hometown of John Duncan, the home state of my good friends Howard Baker, Lamar Alexander, Robin Beard, and Jimmy Quillen, the world will share its knowledge, accomplishments, and hopes for tomorrow. Americans, welcome the world to Tennessee. The technology exhibited here once seemed as fanciful as the extraction of sunbeams from cucumbers in Gulliver's Travels. But as de Tocqueville said, when people live in democracy, enlightenment, and freedom, their societies will be marked by scientific genius and discovery. The countries represented here to hold out the hands of friendship and cooperation. Let us join them. Inventors of the world share the discoveries of their laboratories, universities, and research centers. Let us pool our knowledge, technology, and our dreams. In the days and months ahead, let this spot be the focus of progress, not only in the field of energy, but for the cause of peace. The theme of this fair, Energy Turns the World, is appropriate for this decade, as our nation and many of our allies struggle to produce and use energy efficiently to provide for our energy security. We've seen the havoc and felt the pain brought on when vital energy sources outside our influence have been cut off. We've seen our economies manipulated, our industries hamstrung, and our people squeezed between scarcity and inflation. Together and independently, we've taken steps to make sure that never again will we be so vulnerable. Here in America, in this administration, our national energy policy dictates that one of the government's chief energy roles is to guard against sudden interruptions of energy supplies. In the past, we tried to manage a shortage by interfering with the market process. The results were gas lines, bottlenecks, and bureaucracy. A newly created Department of Energy passed more regulations, hired more bureaucrats, raised taxes, and spent much more money, and it didn't produce a single drop of oil. In fact, American oil production continued to decline. Just as in today, and in too many other cases, government did not solve the problem, it became the problem. Our administration is determined to press forward for real solutions. Already, we have dramatically increased our strategic petroleum reserve.
Instead of managing scarcity, we'll help ensure continued supplies from a strategic stockpile, alleviating shortages while permitting the private market to work. Our stockpile, I'm happy to tell you, is now one of the largest in the world, more than a quarter billion barrels, an amount greater than 135 days' supply of the crude oil we import from the Arab OPEC nations. Last year, this reserve has been stocked with more than twice as much oil as was accumulated in the preceding 4 years. We will increase it to nearly three times our current supply as a symbol to our allies of our resolve to reduce our vulnerability. We will ensure that our people and our economy are never again held hostage by the whim of any country or cartel. In the area of conservation, our industries and our citizens have increased energy efficiency and cut back on waste. The amount of goods and services that we produce for each unit of energy went up last year by 4.5%, the greatest increase in 30 years. For the last several months, our net oil imports have been less than half of their 1977 levels. But energy is still a great concern. Even with our improved conservation, we consume 16 million barrels of oil a day. Now, let me give you an idea how many 16 million barrels is. Imagine the distance to the moon. If those 16 million barrels were stacked up each day, they'd reach the moon about once a month. We're the world's largest consumer of energy, but we use that energy well. We are one of the most productive nations in the world. Estimates show that the 25 eastern states and Washington, D.C., which expends most of its energy shuffling paper, produce about as much in goods and services as the entire Soviet Union. And with only 5% of the world's population, we Americans account for more than 21% of the world's output. But we can't afford to be complacent. Our energy appetite means our energy production must be allowed to keep pace. In the last year, our oil production in the lower 48 states ended its decades-long decline. In 1981, America produced nearly 90% of the energy that it consumed. What caused this turnaround? The same principle responsible for most of the prosperity, production, and progress in the world today. Free enterprise. Our economic and energy problems were in large part caused by government excesses and quick fixes, not by a basic scarcity of supply. Our principles have not failed us. Too many times, we have failed to live up to our principles. Since January 1981, when I ordered immediate decontrol of oil, we have removed requirements for more than a million man-hours of energy-related paperwork, eliminated more than 200 energy-related regulations, cut taxes to encourage capital investment, begun to dismantle the Department of Energy, and produced or reduced spending nearly $5 billion from the levels proposed by the previous administration. We are unleashing again the power of our people and the forces of democratic capitalism. Skeptics said the decontrol of oil would send prices soaring. But the price of gas at the pumps has been dropping. Gasoline prices at last no longer lead inflation, but are actually holding it down. Within a year of decontrol, more than 1,000 new drilling rigs began searching for oil and natural gas. 40% more successful oil wells were completed in 81 than the year before. In February, our oil production was the greatest it's been for the last 2 years. There is magic in the free marketplace, and it works. Although oil has been decontrolled, natural gas, the nation's largest source of domestic energy production, remains under price controls. As a result, natural gas wells have increased only 10%. The legislative agenda this year is too crowded to handle the issue of natural gas decontrol. But if America is to provide for her energy security, if we're to continue growing more self-reliant, if we're to free ourselves from foreign pressure, we must press toward the ultimate solution to our energy problems, the decontrol of all of our energy sources, including natural gas. And this we shall do. Within our boundaries and just off our shores, experts estimate that compared to our current reserves, 3 times as much oil and gas are yet to be discovered. We're also blessed with 1/4 of the free world's coal and uranium resources. In the last year, America's also greatly increased exports of coal, strengthening our economy and helping our allies lessen their dependence on imported oil. In 1981, exports from this country of coal reached 110 million tons. That's 20% more than the previous year. Coupled with our decreasing oil imports, this meant America's net dependence on foreign energy fell to less than 13%. It was nearly 25% in 1977. Though quite small, our use of solar power is expanding. Many people across the country are experimenting with renewable technologies such as wind and geothermal power. The Synthetic Fuels Corporation has also become operational, managing loan guarantees and price supports for some important projects. But heavy reliance on these sources is still in the future. We still have to depend on practical sources available today, such as nuclear power, which now produces more of America's electricity than oil, the Clinch River Reactor, which will use new breeder technology, and the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, not far from here, symbolize our commitment to developing safe nuclear energy and technology to secure our energy future. Our Secretary of Energy, Jim Edwards, tells the story about the time in his home state of South Carolina he spotted a car bearing a bumper sticker, "Split wood, not atoms." Well, he said he didn't think the fella driving the car had ever split much wood, especially not a one enough for a typical family's needs, because it isn't very easy. I can testify to that. But Jim said he wanted to tell him that America must split both atoms and wood. It'll take the use of many technologies to satisfy our future energy demands. We're pursuing our goal of energy security while still respecting and protecting our environment. The staggering statistics of progress that I've recited today, our growing independence from foreign oil, and our increasing sophistication in using our reserves reflect American ingenuity at its best. This progress didn't come about as the result of some government program. It's the result of getting government out of the way. We're applying the same philosophy to our economy, restoring incentive, rewarding risk-taking, and hard work, encouraging investment and returning more freedom to the marketplace. An economic mess has been piling up for more than 40 years. Our economic recovery program began only 6 months ago, but already there are visible signs of success. In the last 6 months, inflation, which was 12.4%, has been running at a rate of only 3.2%. And last month, the Consumer Price Index, the measure of inflation, actually went down. For the first time in 17 years, not only did goods not get more expensive, they got cheaper. In the 6 months since our tax cut took effect, the rate of personal savings has increased. And we've seen recent gains in housing starts, auto sales, and retail sales. Now, we still have a long way to go before our economy is back in shape. And this recession is causing great pain to too many of our people. But there was a thing called the Misery Index that was created in the 1976 presidential campaign. It was used against the then-incumbent President Ford. And the Misery Index had been created by adding the rate of inflation and unemployment. And at that time, they were something around 12%. And they were used over and over against, as I say, the president in that campaign. Well, in the 1980 campaign, they didn't mention the Misery Index because it had risen to 20.8%. I'm happy to tell you the Misery Index is now currently 9.8%. Still, there is pressure from many sides to retreat to business as usual. Thank you. There are still those in leadership positions who would allow government to grow bigger and bigger. Many well-intentioned people suggest that we can't spend less and we must tax more. As the decisions become tougher and the stakes get higher, some people in Washington are throwing up their hands. Their only answer for our energy problems, for our economy, and for virtually any difficulty at all is more government. But we will continue to press for a bipartisan budget. But the only compromise offered so far has been, if our side agrees to raise taxes, the other side will continue to increase spending. You know, trying to end the recession or eliminate the deficit by raising taxes is like the Big Orange trying to pull a football game out in the fourth quarter by punting on third down. Well, no government... No government in the history of civilization has ever voluntarily reduced itself in size. But with God's help, this one's going to. Yes, we had the largest... We had the largest tax cut in history last year, but it barely offsets the massive, largest tax increase in history that had been passed in 1977. And yes, we cut the rate of growth in government spending nearly in half. But if we don't cut spending more, and if we don't protect the people's tax cut, we'll see the largest deficit and the highest personal tax burden in American history. I don't believe that you sent us to Washington to raise your taxes. And I don't think you sent us to Washington just to do what everyone did before us, spend and spend and spend. We don't have a $1 trillion debt because we don't tax enough. We have a $1 trillion debt because we spend too much. We must balance the budget, but history shows it can't be done simply by raising taxes. And for that reason, I've asked the Congress to pass as soon as possible a constitutional amendment to require a balanced budget. Then there will be no partisan pointing of fingers, there will be no refusal to compromise, and there will no longer be any red ink below the bottom line of our budget. 20 years of tax and spend policies resulted in 21% interest rates, back-to-back years of double-digit inflation, and the unemployment rate that afflicts us today. Retreating to those tired old policies will only bring us more of the same. We plan to hold down spending, reduce taxes, and return prosperity. And we think that's the most compassionate program of help for the people that we can possibly produce. I'm sure that patriots in every country believe that their nation holds the key to world progress. But I have long believed the United States of America and her people have a special destiny. Abraham Lincoln said, God would never cease to call America to her true service, not only for her sake, but for the sake of the world. I believe the challenge of this generation of Americans is to turn our country to a different path, to restore it to the principles that made it great, because the free world, indeed Western civilization, needs a strong United States. The community of nations must work together to achieve stability, security, and peace. This exposition that we open today is another step toward achieving those goals. You know, to those who have refused to take part, who are conspicuously absent, who continue to lock their people in misery through isolation and tyranny, we can say to them only, we wish you had come. But we'll make no effort to hide this wealth of ideas. We believe advances in the human condition can only come from open markets, free trading, and stiff competition. Men and nations who ignore those forces will be lost to time. Let the rest of us draw from this exposition a sense of confidence and community. Let us realize that free men and women still have the power to better their lives and raise the standard of living for all mankind. Let us recognize that those things that bind us and keep us strong, our democratic political institutions, our market economic systems, our commitment to liberty, and our belief and faith in human dignity. And let us reaffirm our partnership among citizens, among states, and among nations. What a partnership it was for this community to bring forth this great exposition. Maybe we should all recall that late in the last century, there was a great world exposition, and at that time, there was a member of our Congress who actually proposed a measure to eliminate the patent office because he said everything had been invented that needed to be invented or that could be invented. Well, I wouldn't be talking into a microphone today if we'd gone along with that. As we pool knowledge and resources here in Knoxville, our cooperation will become the keystone of a more peaceful and a stable world. Now, I'm looking forward to seeing something of this exposition. Thank you all. Have a good time, and God bless you.